Welcome to Futile Podcast. Tonight, Zach and Ian, we're going to talk about our exploits down at the WonderCon. This is the WonderCast.
Do you have to always put like a word
in front of
the thing we're going to talk of and then say cast afterwards?
Yeah, like if we went to a carnival, it'd be the Carney Cast. If we went to a rodeo, it'd be the Rodeo Cast.
Is that necessary?
It's absolutely not necessary.
Okay.
So we got back about a week ago from this thing. Mm-hmm. We had our little adventure, got up super early because we live up in Northern California where Highway 101 is the only way to connect us to most of the big city stuff. And the mudslide had basically blocked it out. So
yep.
We had to take 299 and 5, and it was an extra long adventure on that part in that respect, but not a big deal. It was fun. It wasn't fun, but it was unremarkable.
Uh-huh.
So we get into San Francisco Friday at April 1st. No major April Fool's jokes have been befallen us at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think it really at any point. I think we lucked out there. We dodged a bullet on that. And we check into the hotel where you guys are staying. I'm staying with a friend of mine, so I'm not staying with you guys, but I'm sort of with you guys at that time. Everything went pretty well there in that respect. And then we went and got our badges, and that all worked out pretty well. I mean, I don't know. None of the situation was terribly insane. I didn't find... I mean, my whole general experience with the con was that there was a decent number of people, but it wasn't insanity. It wasn't like once you entered the Moscone Center or whatever, it was like packed with
people.
They had
pretty... The nice thing was they had pretty sizable areas for things. I mean, a convention center is good about that, but like the floor down below where all the booths and stuff was enormous.
Yeah.
It was, you know, multiple football field size, big open.
Yeah, the dealer's room or the
ballroom was... equally enormous. They fit 5,000-6,000 people in there per panel, and the even the rooms downstairs you could fit a whole heck of a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think that's one thing that helped. I mean, there were certain times when things were letting out, people were getting outside. It was kind of hard to navigate through things. You know, there was definitely a lot of people there, and they said that they had a
purposely made Saturday
purposely
less popular.
Toned down what was going to be there on Saturday because there were way too many last year and it was like just, it would collapse.
Which I think is kind of short-sighted on their part.
Oh, it is for sure. But I mean, it's a not-for-profit event, so.
How is it a not-for-profit event?
It is. It's a not-for-profit organization that just puts it on as, I mean, they make money off it, obviously, but.
They're filling it with Comic-Con, right?
Not-for-profit.
And there's all these guys there selling comic books, and then there's all these panels there selling their movies and their wares.
But that all goes to the people who have the booths or whatever.
So, but you buy a...
It's like a junket.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
So you're saying it's not for profit in the sense that they don't expect to reek in a huge
amount
of profit.
It's not something they do to make profit, though they, I'm sure, I mean, they have to pay salaries of... You know, the people
They get a lot of people to volunteer so that then they can get a free ticket and stuff. And they were all pretty cool. Like, most of the people that were volunteering seemed to be pretty happy and excited, and they were having fun. I had been to Comic-Con years ago a couple of times when I really didn't care about any stuff. I didn't care about comics or anime. I kind of hadn't really gotten into either of those at that point. And I just kind of wandered around and found it kind of fun, but this was kind of just the same thing. I went through and looked through all the panels and decided which ones I cared about seeing, which was only a few, but I sort of looked at it like, well, when you're at the convention, if you're there for the convention, then there's either panels or there's, you know, walking around looking for stuff to buy. Like, you know, like it's just like 17 comic book stores. Or there's the celebrity bullshit, like you want to get somebody to sign something or something.
Right.
Like, who's there? And I wasn't too interested in the latter two things. I was more interested in sort of getting a chance to sit in on some interesting panels, maybe see some interesting people talk about, you know, what they do as writers or.
And you said artists. You said earlier you had a choice between fan stuff and industry stuff, and you chose industry. That's what you told me.
By and large, yeah. I mean, I think what there were things like, you know, Cowboys and Aliens with Jon Favreau and like that would be like a big movie cool thing to see. But if that was also timed with, I don't know, something where it was some creator who sounded like they might do an interesting talk about about writing or something. But the main conflict is usually that some stuff starts. They don't have everything start on the hour. There's kind of this like dueling thing where there's a whole run of stuff that starts on the hour and a whole run of stuff that starts on the half hour. Right. And so if you look through the entire day's thing and you identify maybe one or two, you're like, oh, I definitely want to see this. If that's on the half hour, then you know you're screwed for anything that's on the hour that comes within like a certain range. Because you either want to give yourself at least a half an hour or just shoot the moon. And I didn't know how panicked I needed to be about getting in. I would say...
That said, I feel like, I mean, there were a few times I left one thing and then went into another. I feel like you could have left any single one of the things you were in or one of the things we were in and gotten into what you were going to.
Probably, yeah.
You just would have had to sit in the back.
Yeah, no, and I would have been fine for about 90% of that.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest one I wanted to go to was the Writing for Cartoon one, which was Friday afternoon, because I wanted to see Paul Dini, who's like one of my favorite cartoon writers and all that. And that's kind of like a profession I'm sort of interested in getting into, is writing shows, or at least initially. And so I actually got to sit right in the front and ask a question and meet him, and that was very cool. That was kind of my geek moment for me, because I'm not huge on like meeting celebrities or any of that kind of stuff. And I don't know how many, most people probably don't even know who Paul Dini is, but like for me, if there were like 20 celebrities that I'd care about meeting, you know, they'd be people that whose work I would actually be interested in and almost want to be like, I really wanted to like talk with this person like for real, you know. And he would be one of them. So
you're not a starstruck guy. You were looking for people who, you know, would help you model your life on them, so you could get ahead and crush your enemies. Right.
See them driven forth and lamentations of the women and all that. Yeah. No. I mean, it's both an encouraging thing and it's sort of an inspiring.
Do sociopaths need encouragement?
Yeah. Sometimes it's nice to. It's just cool to see, like, that somebody, just some person, you know, can sit down and hammer out an idea, and then that idea gets translated into something. And, you know, they even talked, that was the first cool thing they talked about in the Writing for Cartoon panel, was like, what percent of what you write actually ends up? And a lot of them were like, you know, like 10-15%, which is both discouraging, but also, I mean, you know, I think I'm pretty measured about the process. I mean, for my money, if someone's going to pay me to come up with stories, if they use 15% of the story I come up with, you know, I still get the fun of coming up with a story.
Yeah.
And at some point, if it's a story I really, really, really love, then I would lobby for it and I would try to get myself into executive producer standing or something. You know, I would wait on those things.
I'd say that percentage is the exact same I had when I was doing the music video writing.
Yeah.
In some cases, it was like even less than that. But the first couple things I did, probably somewhere between like 10-15% of what I'd put on the page. Like,
and I mean, I didn't. And no one asked them. And I don't know if they were just talking about like their old days in Hanna-Barbera, or if that had been a through line. But like Dini mentioned, working on a Symbiotic Titan episode, and them only using a tiny piece of the script he wrote to make the whole episode.
Yeah.
But I also know that he, I think at some point, ended up having producer credit on like Batman the Animated Series. And so I wonder if his working relationship with someone like Bruce Timm was such that maybe more of his actual like story elements and things ended up in the final scripts or in the final versions. And that was something, that would be another question I would want to ask him if I were lucky enough to.
Did he do the Batman and Robin adventures also, the one after it, or was
he? He continued to write a lot of those. I mean, they talked about, I also got to see the Dwayne McDuffie, you know, panel where all a lot of those guys that had worked with him talked about him. And they mentioned that Dini was going to be the big writer for Justice League and stuff, but he had like carpal tunnel at the time. Which seems ridiculous. Like, so he could still dictate stuff to somebody that could type it. Like, that to me is like, wow, how come there wasn't some, how come he didn't have some kind of assistant that could do this? But who knows, maybe that's his process. And so McDuffie took over doing a lot of the Justice League writing because he's also like a really fast, quick script writer.
Yeah.
But Dini was, even into JLU, was still writing episodes. But yeah, no, so he did Superman stuff and all that. I mean, I'd say he's primarily known for the old Batman the Animated Series. And I mean, I even mentioned it to him, like specifically to him when he was done with the panel, because he was one of those, you know, you always hear about the cool guys that are real cool. He was actually one of those cool guys and just kind of like he was like, we have to go because the other panel was starting and there was people like sort of surrounding him and he was talking with them about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did the persistent thing, the awkward thing that you do like with college professors when they're having office hours and they're talking with somebody else. And it's like, you want them to know you want to talk to them, but you don't want to like infringe on their conversation that they're having, you know? And so I was able to ask him a few other questions after. But one thing I mainly was able to tell him was just how much I really enjoy an episode of the Batman Animated Series that he wrote. The one with the schlubby guy that the Joker kind of harasses, right, and makes work for him. I don't know. Even to this day, I think about seeing that as a kid. And, like, why did I like that so much as a kid? Because there's... And then I think about that being, like, a kid's show and that being an episode of a kid's show. And what they do nowadays where everything's got to be, like... I think even for younger kids, it's, like, all about this weird appeal of being a teen and being in high school. And so everything has to have that in it now.
Right.
You know? Unless it's just pure absurdism, like Adventure Time or something. It's, like, all these action cartoons, like Symbiotic Titan stuff. It's, like, you have to have... They have to be this... The characters have to be this certain kind of young kid age. Otherwise, how is it going to appeal to kids? And the original Batman the Animated Series, other than having a little bit of Robin, who was college age in those ones, didn't have kids. Hardly at all. It was all very adult storylines and adult themes. I mean, the guy's bitching about how his wife's going to make meatloaf and stuff. And it's like... I don't know. It was such a good...
And he's going to roll it at the 7-pin?
Yeah, roll it at the 7-pin. So it was just cool to me to be able to see someone who I admire as a writer, who was told some great stories that I got to enjoy, and just tell them, you know, I like those, and then just talk with them for a few seconds about that.
Yeah.
And who knows? Maybe I'll meet him again later if I continue in the career path.
Maybe you'll meet him on the other side.
Yeah, right. Right. So that was my big thing. And so by 4:30, you were sending me texts like, because you guys were all a bit keen on seeing the Green Lantern movie panel. Because everyone was like, everyone, all the con bees, the term I trademarked, all the people that go stupid to the cons for the zombie.
I officially protest your stupid term.
I know, you should. We're all about, oh man, Ryan Reynolds, hooray, the Ryan Reynolds. Listen, isn't...
When you got a guy that hot with abs like that, you have to be close by.
I guess so.
You hope that just by being nearby, his abs will transfer.
Something will happen to you, right? You'll get discovered by a Hollywood
cast. Blake Lively was hot, and I've never been a Blake Lively fan.
That's the woman that's in it? That's the love interest? Okay.
She looked real good, if you know what I mean.
Fantastic, yeah. Real good, real nice. So you were like, dude, if you want to get on this, and it's like, you know what? No, I just want to, you know, stand by awkwardly and then wait to talk to Dini for a few more seconds. So I did that. Then I went outside and the line was batshit. It was still people in line to go into this 5,000 plus ballroom to see 10 minutes of the Green Lantern live action movie and hear a couple actors like do their PR.
It looked like garbage, by the way.
Yeah, okay, well...
It's just so CGI.
I saw... I watched the clip on... it's on Netflix or... It's on iTunes now or whatever. Some of it. It says an abridged portion of what they showed. And yeah, some of it... It's pretty heavy.
They said they hadn't finished it yet. What's his name? Jeff Johns kept saying it wasn't finished yet. And,
Now, was he writing it? Did he write the screenplay for this?
No, he was... he's an executive producer on it.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if he wrote the screenplay. I'm not sure. But like, you know, they made the decision to make his suit CGI, and Reynolds explained it like, he's like, well, the thing that they decided was because since the suit is generated by the ring and it's pure energy, then it should look like that.
Yeah.
But it just looks... That part looks so fake. And like the backgrounds and everything, like what... I don't know. I mean...
It's a very space opera series.
We'll see the final looking thing, but it was like, you know, magical fairyland colors with, like,
yeah.
a non-CGI guy wearing a CGI suit walking around with CGI people and, like...
Yeah, I've seen...
Whatever.
The material I saw made me think... Make it bad, because...
But
so I'm outside standing in this line that goes about two blocks away.
Yeah.
Not really caring at that point if I get in because I'm still riding Cloud Nine from.
Yeah.
I mean, I embarrassed myself
as much as a sociopath can ride.
I embarrassed myself at the panel, you know, trying to ask a question loudly so they wouldn't have to repeat it, and I pissed off Mark Evanier.
What a moron.
Whatever. Yeah. But
That's the Garfield guy, right?
That's the Garfield guy. And my question was, what stage of the writing process do you have the most difficulty with, and what sort of tricks have you dealt with it? And Mark Evanier's was basically, well, I've written like about 300 Garfields, so my hardest thing is like coming up with a new Garfield story. You know, that was his answer to it. And then Dini and Alan Burnett and Stan Berkowitz all kind of basically just talked about, like, you know... You know, it's the whole, the frustration of doing an outline. It's, you have to sit down and you have to just kind of plot your pieces out. Alan Burnett was really good about,
you saw,
like...
You saw Burnett and Tim later also, didn't you?
Yeah, I saw Burnett and Tim twice.
Yeah. Now, how come you don't hold those guys...
I do.
...to the level that you hold Dini? Because you talk about Dini a lot.
Well, here's the thing.
Burnett and Tim were, like, intimately involved in every stage of,
yeah,
like, not only
things, yeah.
the animated series and Batman and Robin Adventures, but also the comic books that were based on those that were brilliant.
You know, I was never... I think Dini was also involved in the Batman Adventure comics. I was never as into those comics.
Those were great.
I've heard they're really good. Your brother has a lot of them.
Yeah.
They were after the animated series, though,
right?
They were a product of that. Now, were they just comic versions?
No, all
so they're all... See, it sounds like there's some good stories.
Really
there.
Great stuff in it, yeah.
And I guess I have to...
There's great art and stuff. And a lot of the characters, the DC characters that are so stupid, like Etrigan's and that Swamp Thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Jason Blood, like, the only time I've ever seen that guy when he was cool and when Etrigan was cool was in one of the animated series comics. Yeah, it was rad.
Well, interesting. No, I might, you know, check those out then. No, I like those guys. I think Dini's name just is a little more recognizable. I also had noticed that he had written other things. I mean, like I said, I look at his career as like a writer, more or less, and I see that he's done a lot of things. And then he also has a podcast I listen to. So it's just like, there's a chance to listen to him yammer about things, and it's cool. So I wouldn't say, Tim is a big deal, of course. But Tim is more in the production standpoint, in the directing of animation. So for me personally, it's like, I don't have like those kind of questions that I'd want to ask to him that I would have for Dini. But I mean, yeah, Burnett for sure, and yeah, they gave good. It was just a good panel. Okay, so I'm waiting outside. You're inside. You're getting to see Blake Lively, and you know that's hot. And
it was hot.
And it looks like fairies in CG land. Wow. I just saw the material that you saw, or some of it. I'm kind of inclined to agree. I'm not sure where to go on this. The first trailer I saw for it played a little more on the Hal Jordan character and the issue of like the theme of fear and stuff. And it made it look like it could have an interesting...
Well, that's fine. I mean, his arc is okay. The Hal Jordan arc is okay because, first of all, it's somebody with a concrete... unlike most other things, which is like someone just happens into their situation. I mean, he does happen into a situation.
Yeah, yeah.
But he has a concrete dream. And the thing that happens to him ends up kind of like fulfilling this dream. This guy loves flying. He loves space. The Darwin Cook stuff made that like a strong thing for me. And that's one of the only things I really enjoyed about that 50s set.
That's not just Green Lantern though, right? That's the whole Justice
thing. It's everything, but it starts with the whole Hal Jordan thing, and especially the cartoon
goes
on forever about it. But it's like just a really strong thing about the guy. The guy's like a thrill seeker, wants to go into space, wants to fly. You know, he's got these goals and dreams, and generally you don't get that out of any sort of superheroes. Just like, you know, Superman was a baby who was launched to Earth with superpowers. Batman's parents were killed.
No, I know. I mean, I'm just saying in terms of judging the movie, or us prejudging the movie.
No, I agree. But I'm saying it's got a built-in strength of character.
Yeah.
That's great.
Green Lantern
is stupid.
Yeah.
Let's get serious. It's a dumb thing with a magical green ring that goes into a lantern, and they say some stupid thing and some junk happens, and they got these green suits and they can fly and they can make big giant boxing gloves come out of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's stupid.
It's
stupid.
Pretty dumb.
That's one of the reasons why I don't like DC overall.
Batman
is the only thing DC is worthwhile to me about. Except for when they get really good artists and writers to tweak the stuff they have.
Okay.
I love the Alex Ross stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when Frank Miller's gotten involved and Alan Moore's gotten involved in things, it tends to be good. And,
yeah.
You know, not that Batman needs, you know, I don't think Batman needs the help. Though I do think a lot of the stuff through the main Batman comics has been written by hacks and morons, and I really don't like a lot of the storylines.
From, I don't know,
anywhere all through it. Anything that's not like a major...
Major art. Have you read the No Man's Land? I'm reading that now. Mm. It's pretty good. It's when Greg Rucka starts writing Batman, and he's still around writing it. And so I'm outside, happy, in line, don't care, for the most part, because I'm just like, whatever's going to happen. I got the one thing I was worried right. about.
You keep saying this over and over. What are you getting to? What's the point?
I got shit on by a bird outside. Like, that's in a great. Line with a bunch of people, and I get shit on by the bird.
I was wondering why you kept talking about you being outside.
Fortunately... I had made friends with a couple of people in line, and they like, between the two of them, like, someone had, like, a tissue and someone had, like, nice, a cup. Nice. So they, like, helped me clean the bird shit off myself and then even had a trash thing for it, which That's was great. Awesome. And I didn't care because I... Because
you're a sociopath.
Because I had done what I needed to do. Yeah. I, you know, talked to a writer, and that was cool. And eventually somebody came around and said, look, there's no chance you're getting in for the Green Lantern thing. But then eventually, a little bit later, I think, or maybe at the same time... They were like, if you want to stay in line for the movie, which is what I really cared about more.
Yeah.
I didn't give a shit about
the animated
Ryan Reynolds. I wanted to see they were going to show the whole movie, and I've liked almost all the DC movies right. on some level, and then they were going to do a panel. So I got in on that. I met up with you guys. This was already like, this movie didn't start till like 8 or something.
It's late.
It was getting late, and so it was like... We're all tired. We've all had a long day. I've been up since like...
And then it was 30. The longest anime.
And then it was the longest made. One they've ever done. It was like done.
Longer than Akira.
Yeah, it wasn't longer than Akira. But it was longer than their average one. Yeah. Usually they clock in at about like 70.
And minutes. Longer without being interesting.
Yeah, it was unfortunately a...
I mean, pile of trash.
No, I would not say that.
A heaping...
Like any anthology movie... It's got good stories, and then it's got bad ones, and so and on an average...
Four Rooms was better than
on
this.
On an average, it ends up being, like, hard to say it's objectively good, because there's no real... The through line seems so... The biggest problem is they establish the through line at the beginning, and then you think, well, that's going to be the whole movie. It's going to be, like, 70 minutes of this crazy, epic, you know, adventure where people are getting...
Here's what they should have done.
They should have done that.
Here's what they should have done. Start it how it goes, that's fine. Cut... Let's say, how many vignettes did they do about?
They should do 3 instead of 5.
So they did 5, right?
I think they did 5.
They should have done 3, and then right before the end, they should have done one where someone else tells her about something Hal did. Because
it would have been nice to get
his
Hal.
Character yeah. is worthless in it.
Yeah,
he's just there to tell stories.
Yeah.
You don't learn anything about him except for he's a pompous guy with what's his name's voice, Nathan Fillion's voice.
Nathan Fillion, yeah.
And who's a great guy, but there's nothing to his character. There's no depth, it's not fleshed out.
You were missing a how
you flesh out everyone else's character. They all have arcs, they all have things they have to overcome. He doesn't have anything he has to overcome.
Not really.
But by his dumb stories, then the girl has the brilliant idea to do something stupid that ends up only working because the planet happens to help out.
Yeah.
The planet Green Lantern, which is
makes no sense because the rest of them have to recharge, but how do you recharge a planet?
Because I'm telling you, he's got a lantern
in the planet
sitting on like a rock in the planet, and then there's like a little branch that has the ring on it.
That must be
right?
it.
Right? And the ring just aims toward it.
It's
and
dumb.
He was trying to help the whole time, except for it takes him a thousand years to say the thing to charge the ring.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Because the wind has to blow the right way to whistle through the thistles to make it say the thing. Yeah, no, not their best animated film. I think the best one... I haven't seen all of them. They're working on a year one.
They've got almost all of them on Netflix.
Yeah, I'm definitely... I've got All-Star Superman on Blu-ray, and I'm going to check that out really soon. And then after that, of course, Andre Romano, who's like the biggest voice director around, and Bruce Timm, and Jeff Johns.
You stuck around.
Guys. Yeah, I stuck around. Yeah, I don't know why you guys didn't. You guys are all tired.
Yeah, we've been in there forever. I don't want to sit there and listen to those jerks talk about that stupid movie that wasted my life.
Well, I felt like...
Wasn't that a great movie, you guys? Let's clap for the 50th time about it.
Yeah,
now you're going to get some cool free stuff. Psych, it's not. You're not getting anything.
I definitely want to bring that up. The whole idea of it's like you already got us nerds at. We've already bought the ticket to the Monster Truck Show. You don't need to keep selling us on the Monster Truck Show. Come on, just relax. just stop selling the idea of being a fan at cons. There's no reason for that. Because everyone is there. They already know that.
How many people on the fence go to a convention?
I doubt very many do, yeah.
They've already made their decision.
Yeah, they're already like, yeah, we're going to buy, your shit, dude, okay? Yeah. Like, hooray, we clap for you because you're awesome, and then we don't need to do it every time you mention some new project you're working on or whatever.
Who was the secret special guest?
There was no secret special
guest. He kept saying that. The guy with the weird hair and the goatee.
Yeah, exactly.
Kept saying there's going to be a secret, a special guest, a secret special. Hey, where are you guys going? Hey, you thousands of people leaving en masse.
I don't
come back. There's a secret guest.
I know at one point he had Fillion on his cell phone.
Oh, was that?
That must have been it. I don't know. I don't care about that shit, though.
Did you ask him to prove it?
No, I didn't. And then
hey, guys, guess who I got on my phone? It's President Obama.
No. He had him on speakerphone.
I love the movie, you guys.
He had him on speakerphone,
Did it just sound like a garbled speakerphone?
It actually sounded better than it should have sounded, but I don't know how speakerphones work these days. Probably.
Fake.
Yeah, probably pre-recorded, right?
Yeah, and he just said lines that were meant to match up with what he
said. I really don't care, because I was more interested in whatever Tim had to say about working on the project or whatever. Because Tim is a pretty... Like, Tim doesn't sell you on anything. Tim
says
what he
thinks. Did you learn anything from them talking?
Maybe.
No, you didn't.
I learned a little bit from the Dwayne McDuffie thing. But the point is, like, I bought the ticket because I wanted to experience the con and see the people talk and do their thing. That was why I was there. Almost every second I was there, I was like, I want to be getting something out of this. So, yeah, then after that, I went and met up with you. You guys hadn't even eaten yet. So
no,
it wasn't like you guys just all went back
we
to the hotel room
and we sat there.
And sat and
I didn't sulk. It was great. It was
you went to catch up on baseball.
It was cool. It was cool. I sat down in this cool
hotel room.
And they laid on their bed and snuggled up together.
Because Blaine and Ryan made the smart decision not to get any sleep the night before, so they were both exhausted. And
I think Ryan slept the majority of the time.
And apparently Ryan was sick.
Because the next day he slept multiple times also.
Yeah, it was too bad.
He slept from like 5 to 7:30, then slept from 8:30 to 9 the next morning. And
Jesus. And then, so we got some food. I went and hung out with my buddy Nolan and went to a San Francisco house party until 3 a.m., which was an experience.
Any hood rats?
Not really.
Yeah.
Not really.
Gotta get on this hood rat train.
What can I tell you, dude? There wasn't anything happening. Nolan had gotten really drunk and he was like...
He's trying to hook you up.
He was like thinking he was gonna... He's like, you know, you're never gonna see these other people again.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Nolan.
And I'm like,
Nolan knows what's up.
But 3 o'clock, I'd almost been awake for 24 hours at that point.
Oh, so you're saying you couldn't have kept that up?
I had whiskey dick. No. I
forgot that's even a term.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It's a good one, though, right? Plus, I was going to meet up with your brother the next day at 10, and we were going to get into the car.
Oh, my gosh,
10.
Make sure you get 9 hours of sleep, right?
So we got buttons. I think I got like 5
Right, the coach from Teen Wolf?
What? Teen Wolf.
At one point, he tells them that it's important that he gets 12 hours of sleep.
This is day two now. It's a Saturday. I get in with Seth. We get in line. We get some free DC stuff. I got another copy of Batman Inc., which is awesome.
Just so people know, you're talking about my brother Seth, who cares about this stuff, and not your brother Seth, who only cares about StarCraft.
Yeah. And I think I mentioned something to him at one point when we were walking like through the dealer, all the comics and stuff, looking for the JLA deluxes. Which are impossible to find now because they're out of print, and you have to pay hundreds of dollars or whatever, which I'm not going to do. And I was like, "Are you the only guy, other one of us, like that actually like, cares about comic books?" And he's like, "Yeah, I think it might just be you and me."
I love you.
I know that you like them too. Yeah,
I don't want to go look for them
and buy them and stuff.
I don't
want to
buy them. No,
I know. If friends recommend them to you and they have them, they'll let you borrow them. Like, and we'll talk about Swamp Thing at some point.
I would just read them on Borders and online.
That too. Yeah. So then we met with you guys at 11 for Adventure Time panel. Got to see. Was that a 15 or was that a 22? I felt like it was longer than
15.
Okay, so it was like a whole new. It was a funny one. It was good. I was entertained. A new Adventure Time bit. So I'm already batting pretty good. I got to talk to Deanie. I got to get some free shit, just some buttons or whatever. But it didn't weigh me down.
You got a T-shirt?
Yeah, I got the T-shirt, the Green Lantern T-shirt that you guys came up to me with. Yeah, so far I'm batting pretty good. I'm pretty happy because. Get to see the Adventure Time panel, which is good. Talk to what's his name? Well, we didn't talk to him, but he gave us a little talk. The Pendleton or whatever.
Yeah, Pendleton Ward.
Talked about coming up with ideas for crazy characters and all that. And then after that, I broke from you guys.
You went to Super.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was the panel about Super with Rain.
I would have wanted to see, but it was.
You know what? It really wasn't that spectacular. It was very lo-fi. They were kind of like, they didn't know they weren't going to have a moderator, so they had no one to kind of pump them questions. Right. So they kind of just did it to each other, and then they just did a Q&A for a bit. Basically, they really sold the idea of like an absolute independent movie, which is what this Super movie is. It's like, you know, we got no money. Please come see it when it's out tonight. And, you know, because every single ticket counts basically when it's that small of a movie. They talked about how like literally they get like the data about like how many tickets were sold for one show. And that all matters. And James Gunn made a pretty good argument about why littler movies are, you know, why it's tough for Hollywood to get behind those, because of the whole new idea behind the opening weekend.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, so there's no time for word of mouth. It's like, it's all about selling the trailer or something. You know, it's like sell, you know, it was an angle I'd never really thought too much about, but I mean, I guess I'd been aware of, is that it has really become like, if a movie doesn't open at number one, then it fails if it's big. And he mentioned E.T. playing all summer back in the day, you know, like that's how it would make its money, you know, maybe it wouldn't be number one every week or whatever, but it would do well in the long run. Sort of a more prudent business sort of take on things. But yeah, I mean, that's a tough call. That's a tough situation where it's like they just have to dupe enough people into seeing it based on the trailer. And then even now, I don't know how to feel about it, because I mean, there's a form of democracy when it comes to deciding what you decide to go spend money and see from a ticket standpoint. It's like, I paid money to see Sucker Punch, so does that mean I voted yes for more movies like that? If I pay money to go see Transformers 3, do I vote yes for more movies like that? At a certain point, you almost feel like you need to boycott shitty movies. I mean, it's one thing to go see the smaller movies too, but it's another thing to continue.
You're thinking too much about it.
I mean, yeah, maybe I am. And they kind of were too, probably.
If you want to see it, watch it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how I generally go. But the problem up here north is that a lot of shit just never shows. It never shows, and then you have to either wait for it to come out on Netflix, and there's just becoming more good avenues for it, which is cool. So that panel was all right, and then I guess the next panel was Quietly, and that was just kind of a tiny Q&A. He just talked about how he does his work and stuff, how he does a lot of his initial sketches on the bus on his way to work out in Scotland. And so, I mean, so I got to get, you know, I got to hear the writers, then I got, you know, before, and then I got to, you know, just hear an artist talk about it, you know, stuff, and how he works with Grant Morrison and stuff a little bit.
He's like, Grant calls me from a plane. He's on a G5.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's like, here's your story.
Grant always gives me lots of thumbnails. Apparently he's working on 10 more pages for this deluxe version of Wii 3, which is something that Grant Morrison and him did, which is a dog, a rabbit, and a cat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand how that ends up being good, but
because Grant Morrison quietly did it.
Probably, yeah. Well, quietly talks about how when Morrison wanted him to do it, he's like, "Are you serious? I don't think I want to do a dog, a cat. Like, why'd I?" So you had left to go see Cowboys and Aliens and Hannah and all that. Yeah. So how was that? Because I actually do want to hear about
Cowboys and Aliens. Was pretty good. It was good. The panel was good just because it was Roberto Orci,
famous screenwriter of Transformers.
Multi-million dollar screenwriter, and Favreau, who's a joy. He's a joy to be around.
You've seen Dinner for Five, right? Show he hosts?
No.
Yeah, of course he would be. He's seems like a cool guy.
He's very friendly. He was very earnest. He was very eager to please the fans and was just genuinely excited that all those people were there to see him and were excited about. Like, so they show, he goes, I hear that the Green Lantern showed this many minutes, so I guess we have to too. People freaked out, you know? And, and so then they show their thing. And then afterwards, he was just beaming because people were, you know, applauding and everything. He was like, you don't know how good this makes me feel to hear you guys reacting this way. He's like, honestly, no matter how much money is behind a movie, like, I am so scared about it until I hear, you know, something like this. But first of all, it's a stupid idea.
Yeah.
And, like, I can't believe that it got made, and it's such a big, huge thing, and Harrison Ford, but it's got Harrison Ford, and it's got Daniel Craig, and it's got Sam Rockwell, and it's got...
Oh, Rockwell?
Yeah,
cool.
And it's got the Kurgan, and it's got, you know...
It's got the Kurgan?
Yeah, dude, it's got everybody in it.
Oh, I think I'll see it, then.
So it looks pretty rad. It really does. And they showed the alien at the end of it, one of the aliens, uh-huh. and he goes, just so you know, he's like, that's not in any of the trailers. He's like, we were actually arguing about whether we should even put it in this footage here, but you know, we did, and he's like, hopefully none of you recorded it. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
But like, because you know, the whole thing was they're not going to show the alien at all, like in any trailers or anything for it. And it just, you know, just looked like an alien, whatever.
I don't think I don't think it will be a good movie. I think Favs knows it's probably not going to be that good a movie. I think
it's going
to
make money.
It'll make money. I think they showed the alien to the super fans because it's like showing Arnold in Expendables. They're not confident in the product they have, so they need to give you something. That's too bad.
But okay. Like you said, he wasn't selling it to them.
No, of course he wasn't.
It's already sold.
It's already sold, yeah.
It's already sold to them.
So
he was good.
So the game was told, not sold, for
Cowboys. Well, it was actually funny, the Orshi thing, because he was very even-keeled, and he didn't get too excited about things, but he wasn't, like, pompous in any way. Well, he was just very kind of, like, quiet. He kind of moderated, and he asked Favs questions. But at one point, he said something that was kind of funny, which was, what was it? He and Kurtzman had just finished. They ended up doing a bunch of writing on a movie recently that they didn't want to. Was it a sequel? It was a sequel to something.
Not Star Trek 2.
I don't remember what it was, but no, because it was something they weren't credited for the first time around, but this time they had to be because they wanted to rehire the original writers,
uh-huh.
but because the movie had been so successful, they couldn't afford them.
Uh-huh.
And he said that with everyone knowing that it's like. The I forget what movie it was, but it was like a $150 million budget movie, yet they couldn't afford the writers. So, like, you know, since he's a producer on it, I guess I could write it, you know,
yeah.
I don't care. Like that sort of, you know, attitude to it. But it was interesting, like, sitting there knowing that, you know, this guy is one of the highest paid screenwriters in Hollywood and, you know, cranks out the hits. And
he's one of the guys, fringe guys, too, right? Isn't him and Kurtzman and Abrams, I mean, I think?
He's a lost guy. He's a
yeah. Then I think it is. So then after that you had Hannah.
Yeah, after that was Three Musketeers, which is the new Paul W.S. Anderson, who's British apparently. I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
No, but when they showed behind the scenes footage, he's like, "Oh, I'm Paul W.S. Anderson." I love you to see my. And he looks just like Wes Anderson, which was weird to me.
Yeah, yeah. The British Wes Anderson.
You know, it's got the kid from Gamer and from, like, Percy Jackson.
That kid's annoying.
That kid, and he was actually, I thought he was going to be, because he's one of those kids who looks like he knows he's so cool. But he was, like, super, he was, like, really kind of, like, giddy with, like, the experience and just was saying how fun everything was. Like, it was so fun. You know?
Yeah, well, that's
and,
cool.
But the other guy is a guy named Luke Evans, who's this up-and-coming hot guy, right?
Yeah, right.
And he's, like, super tan, he's got the squinty eyes, like.
Oh, my God.
But he was actually very funny. But, like, this guy was... It's just like, you know, a lot of the actors coming out these days are like, well, this guy, he looks like a model. Let's make him an actor.
Yeah, right.
And he was... he played Apollo in Clash of Titans, which means he was on the screen for probably, like, 5 minutes. And then he's in this, and he's in a couple other things coming out. Like, he's one of those guys who's up and coming who hasn't been in anything yet.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay.
One of those it guys. Like, oh, yeah, I just filmed 5 blockbuster movies you haven't seen me before. Like, that's what happened with Sam Worthington.
Yeah.
You know, like, when he was... He came out in Terminator just because he was cast in that. I think he was cast in Clash of the Titans because they were filmed like back to back. Like, how does that happen?
He's got the same stupid haircut and everything too.
Yeah,
just looks like Sarge. Just like, well, Sarge, what's gonna happen now? He's like, I don't know. I'm gonna put on my Metal Gear Solid. We're gonna go kill some Clash of the Titans.
Yeah. So, you know, yada yada, Three Musketeers. Who cares? Anyway, yeah. Then there was Hannah. I want to see it.
Looks good.
I want to see it. Looks really good. Joe Wright. Came out like a pompous douchebag. He had a leather jacket and sunglasses on.
The director of Atonement, right?
Atonement and Pride and Prejudice, yeah. And
the director of Hannah.
And the director of Hannah now. But he ended up being very good. He took his sunglasses off. He kept remarking on little things no one else had mentioned. Like, he was saying something, and he goes, I'm sorry. And he starts reading the back of his placard that says his name on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, please remember that there are children under the age of 18 in the audience
Yeah.
To start, you know,
speak
accordingly. He's like, it sounds like, you know, he's like, I guess I forget these sort of things, because he was like swearing profusely. And then afterwards he started swearing profusely again. And he says he always forgets that Saoirse, the girl, you know, actress, is, you know, not 18. And apparently when he's directing her, he's swearing at her all the time.
Oh my gosh.
He's
like, just fucking do it. Fucking do it.
But
fucking do it. That's his directing
style. Then at the end it turned into this thing. You would have hated it, because at the end they started talking about how they both railed against sexy girl movies and how they're so objectifying.
What? That is dumb. I agree with that.
Why would maybe you would have liked it. They ripped on this, they ripped on that, and they said that this was like, he was just like, he's starting to get angrier and angrier about the fact that like girls who are not of legal age are like objectified sexually and things.
Oh, yeah.
And it infuriated him, and apparently that's one of the major things he's been about, which is why he gravitates toward directing these movies with female leads, because he's trying to make strong female heroines who are not sexually objectified in any way.
Yeah. No, I mean that whole thing is a tough can of worms, as it is with
and then she echoed him. It kind of sounded like she'd been brainwashed by him, but
maybe a little.
Speaking of that, you know, when she's legal, she's going to be super hot.
Okay.
She's got those eyes I was telling you about.
Her eyes are like steely blue, right?
Oh my gosh, they're these big glowing, you know, blue.
Well, and I missed out on that because I was decent, just staying in the same room and I was watching. Because I was so paranoid about going anywhere and not getting in anything and paranoid just being stuck. Yeah. So I was fine.
Are sociopaths usually paranoid?
Sometimes. So I watched, let's see, there was something about all the new Marvel animation stuff with Jeff Loeb was talking. And so I got to see a couple clips of, I got to see one whole new episode of the Marvel Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, which is kind of crappy cartoon. I got to see preview clips of
the X-Men anime, right?
No, the Wolverine one, and I think there was a trailer for one of the other anime, for the Iron Man one.
Right.
Yeah, the Wolverine one was like the first like 6 minutes subbed and all that.
The Young Iron Man Chronicles, as it looks like to me.
Maybe.
Like a thin Iron Man.
Yeah, exactly. And a little few seconds of Ultimate Spider-Man, the Dini's working on and stuff. I don't know. Some of those cartoons might be good. So I got to see a little more preview cartoon stuff and see people talk about working on them a little bit.
You didn't jump up to ask Loeb a question about working on his Batman work?
About Hush and stuff? No, because I don't really know it that well. I mean, I know...
I think the stuff he did was some of my favorite.
Long like, Halloween and stuff is good,
long, Moore and Miller.
Moore did one thing for Batman.
It was great.
It was good, but...
It was great.
It's not that great.
The iconic stuff for me with Batman in it is mostly Miller, but I think of that more also. Like, it's good.
But Miller did two things for Batman.
Three.
Are you calling County All-Star? Because that's not the same continuity.
He did Year One.
Well, actually, technically speaking, Return isn't really in that continuity either. Only Year One is the only thing that would be...
Yeah, well, sure, in continuity.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. I'm not talking
about that.
The Alex Ross stuff is never in continuity. It's all Elseworlds stuff.
That's fine. Yeah, I'd be interested in reading
that. But that's the most interesting stuff because it plays with, you know, it always plays with their archetype. And when it's just a long-flowing storyline, they end up coming across various aliens and mud monsters and communists and whatever else they fight, it becomes boring and stupid.
No, I know you. I'm inclined to agree. So anyway, so after that, then it was the big Cupo Joe Quesada did his big Marvel panel, and they did their preview for their next big crossover Marvel thing, which is basically going to be them riffing on the Green Lantern thing, except with Thor and like Asgard and hammers and things.
Everyone gets hammers.
Everyone gets hammers, it looks like.
You get hammered. Is there a bunch of hooded
and then
guys?
There's like the God of Fear and blah blah blah. I don't know. But Quesada was pretty cool. It was mostly a Q&A, and he was all these guys were just cool guys. And I'm inclined to think if you make it to a certain point, then you probably are, because you probably had to be for a while, and you also realize this is your bread and butter. I mean, you know, these people are going to are the loser nerds that spend all of their money on this and rather than, you know, getting a mortgage for their house or whatever. Like, anyone can do that anyway these days. So after that, I think I had screwed up, but I had like another 90 minutes before another writing and cartoon panel. I checked out where you guys were, and I decided to chill out and go with you guys because I was hungry. I'd been in that room for like 3 hours straight. So I went, I ate, and then missed out on the next cartoon panel, but that was fine. I think your brother and I wandered around a little bit, and then we went to the Dwayne McDuffie memorial thing, which was cool because it was just those guys talking about him and how awesome he was and a little bit of stuff. And then we went to the masquerade.
All those guys work in New York or L.A.?
I want to say L.A.
Because I know...
It's Warner Brothers animation stuff.
I know that... Well, I'm thinking of like...
DC is in, and Marvel are both, they both have LA, and because someone asked
Quesada
about
Quesada's in New York, right?
Yeah, he's in New York. But someone asked him a question about the internship program, and he said, like, the big thing is that you have to be willing to move to either New York or LA. Right. So those are the two places where they do
all that. I know because they have so much movie stuff that there has to be major stuff
in that. Yeah, I know. Well, I know the whole Warner animation thing has always been in LA. Right. So that's where Tim and all those guys have always been. Then The Masquerade, which was completely different than what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like a fashion show for cosplay, you know?
Right, because you went, you know, with heart on and toe, ready to
I didn't see an entire...
You were ready for, you
I know, think other than,
chicks
I think,
busting out of
I think other than other than corsets. than the Veronica Flowers or whatever at the end of the, on Sunday... Ramona, I don't think I saw any cosplayers that were attractive, really.
We saw some. There was the group of Justice League people who were just hanging out.
I never outside. Saw that group, yeah.
And they were all, like, inordinately busty for how thin they were, but they were also mostly attractive in the face.
Like a Wonder Woman kind
of. But the thing that sets it off is, it's weird that they're dressed up.
Oh, yeah.
And it always creeps me out. Like, I see these people and I'm like, is that hot? And then I'm like, no, it's not hot. That's too creepy.
It's too weird, yeah. No, even...
And there were the biggest creeps I've ever seen on Earth following them around taking pictures of them. And they were eating it up. They're like, oh, yeah, take pictures
That's
of us.
That's the point.
You crazy serial killer.
That's the point of the cosplay thing.
At one point, one of them turned to one of the other ones and didn't notice. Like, there was tons of people standing around, but she was like... She said she was dialing her cell phone with her tongue, and some creep started taking pictures of her, and suddenly the creep comes out of the crowd. He's like, well, the reason I did that was...
It was really, you saw that?
Yeah, I saw it happen, like, 10 feet in front of me.
Did you miss that? I missed out on the best moment of the most, like, anthropologically... First off, who is dialing a phone with their tongue? How does it
The
work?
Girl who was dressed like Superman, but she was female.
How does
that
even work?
She had dark hair. She had a dark wig on.
How do you dial a phone with your tongue?
She just did.
Oh, my God. That's weird.
They were all very sexually charged people.
Of course.
And the guy who was playing Naked Man, whatever DC character that is, I'll describe him to you again. He's got on, like, gold boots, white underwear, let's just say, jockey underwear, like tighty whities, with, like, a gold belt, a big long red cape. Yeah. He's blonde, and on the left shoulder of the cape is a big gold... shoulder pad
thing. I couldn't tell you. I don't know about
that's that. Apparently a major DC character, because there was nothing but major DC characters. There was a female Green Arrow, right?
Yeah.
There was the female Superman. There was a Batman chick.
Was that all from some weird Elseworlds worlds where they switched the gender?
No, dude, it was just people who dressed up like junk.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, so The Masquerade, instead of just being this fashion show for the cosplay to appreciate their work that they did on their costumes, and let's give them a clap because, you know, this is part of the culture of all the nerd stuff, which I wanted to... It was like an anthropological thing. I think Seth and I both just wanted to see what this stuff was all about. Instead of it being that, which would have been fine, it was this... Groups submitted their group costumes and then had to do, like, little sketches. And there was, like, 30 of them. And so it was 2 hours of embarrassing, like, terrible, like little quick performances and, like, hokey, like, staged fights between these cosplayers and stuff. And I mean, like, I tell you, the funniest one was the Asian guy dressed like Mark Anthony, you know, with, like, the Roman outfit.
Yeah.
Swinging a sword around for 2 minutes to the Xena Warrior Princess theme. But all I can think of is when Genghis Khan was showing, I think it was Ted. No, it was Bill. He was showing Bill how to, like, do, like, Mongol fight stuff from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And I lost it. I mean, Seth was looking over at me like I think he was afraid we were going to get kicked out or something. Because I was about to roll on the ground, losing it from Genghis Khan, Mark Anthony, swinging a sword around. And I'm like, this is real? Like, I mean, I don't... It's hard because it's like, I've never... I'm a big nerd. I love anime and I love comic books and I geek out on Battlestar Galactica and stuff. But sometimes you really run into, like, the proper, like... And then you almost feel like, does that make me the jock asshole that's laughing at this stuff because it's so dumb or what? And I'm not trying to be judgmental. I appreciate if someone's going to put time into doing their costume. And you know what? You're right, it's weird and it's kind of high wire, but where else are they going to do it but at these cons? And let's face it, that's what that shit's for. It's a big part of it is the anthropology of the group of people that maybe never see each other except once a year to get together to hang out at the hotel room after the fact, and they goof off and they laugh. So I saw the Masquerade once. I never need to see that shit again. I got to talk to Paul Dini. I got to see some writing stuff, and that was cool. I got some free shit. I got to see that new DC movie. And we did almost nothing Sunday. Seth and I walked the thing again. There was a few other panels I was kind of interested in seeing, but we also had to check out of our room before we really... We didn't have a way to make it work. Right. We had to just park somewhere else and blah, blah, blah. And we were all beat anyway. So we were done, so we left Sunday and didn't experience much more of it. I don't know, it was fun. I'm glad you guys, you know that I went with you guys, and I had a good time. And what about you? How did you... I mean, You guys were done, right? The last thing you did was probably the Hannah thing, right? Because you didn't come back to the con on Saturday when Seth and I went, did you?
No.
You guys just stayed in the hotel room.
Yeah, there was some outside stuff. I needed to see, you know. We did go back to the con. We went and walked around the floor.
Oh, you guys did? Yeah. Okay. Well, that's right. Yeah, we went our separate ways at one point.
Yeah, okay. It was, whatever. I went just to hang out and, get away from my house.
Exactly. No, that was a big portion of it for me, too.
I didn't really care about any of the stuff going on, and I didn't need to see any of the movie panels, and I didn't need to sit 20 feet away from Ryan Reynolds. And
yeah, cool.
That was not something I required, but it was all a good experience, you know? And,
yeah, I thought it was fun. I don't know if I'll ever care about doing it again.
Yeah, I wouldn't unless, I mean, if the opportunity arose and it was just a chance to get away again, sure, I might do it.
Oh, I mean, who knows? The next there might be something big for the Batman movie. Yeah. That might be cool, but who knows? I think the stress thing about it is that people sneak in or pop in. Apparently, all the stuff that happened with Inception that last year when Seth was there, like they didn't know Nolan was going to show up and talk about it or anything, which is kind of crappy because it's like. Then that means what? You just go to the big Hollywood ones hoping that somebody that's not related to the stupid movie is going to show up?
Yeah, I think so.
And that just seems like a waste of time when there's other interesting stuff that you can have a more meaningful experience about, you know? You can be closer and maybe actually ask a question of somebody that does something cool in that industry that you're interested in.